Today's April 4th. We're learning theodicy in the Bible. And I'd like to say something a little controversial today. You know, the Holocaust is you know, clearly something beyond any of us. There are those who have tried to give some kind of philosophical explanation. There's a collection of these philosophical explanations in an article written by Pinchas Pelli, P-E-L-L-I. You can just Google Pelli, Holocaust, and you'll find something there. Soloveitchik, I think, wrote something. There's some Eloza Berkovitz, who's a Holocaust historian. I believe that he includes some material from the Satmar Rebbe, he included something from Eima Banim Smecha. You've heard of Yisachar Techtel. So that's a book that everyone studies in Israel now. Yisachar Techtel was a Satmar Chosid. He's not on the level of Moshe Teitelbaum, but he was a Satmar Chosid who was spent the year in the camps, spent the war in the camps. And afterwards he survived, and he wrote a book called Eim HaBanim Smecha, about Zionism. And he turned away from his Satmar roots to consider that we made a mistake in not, I mean, duh, really? We made a mistake in not having 4 million Jews from Europe and Israel in 1920. Imagine how different Europe would be if the Jews, before there was a white paper, were allowed to go. Or actually did go, were allowed to go. It wasn't easy, no doubt, right? But before the white paper, Jews could have gone, right? So, Techtel makes an astounding claim in his book that he thinks that as Jews have been saying, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, the Seder, at the end of Yom Kippur, Jews have had aspirations for Geula for so long. And here, finally, God is calling us to the land. There was a 1917 resolution called the Balfour Declaration, right? Where the ones who are holding the mandate, whether Jews can go or not, is saying, this is your land. By the way, 1922, there was a declaration of the U.S. Congress saying that Jews should come from all over the world and go to the land of Israel, and the Arabs that live there now have plenty of places in the surrounding lands, i.e., Syria, Lebanon. You know that the original Balfour Declaration had as the state of Israel all of Israel today, including Shimon and Gaza, and Jordan. Also, I'm sure you see the pictures. And with full Jordan. So Jordan is 78%, full Israel is 22%. Just like this, 78% was cut off and say, sorry, I know we told you this is yours, but now it's Jordan, called the Trans-Jordan. King of Jordan wanted to call that land Palestine, but Winston Churchill wouldn't let him. He said, Palestine is the name of a Jewish country. Right? So now all of a sudden you've created a nation. Right? So then it was further cut in half, right? 22% by the Peel Commission, the partition plan, right? Which is more of an amputation plan. But, so, okay, fine. The Jews accepted all that. We know the history. So, Techtel claims in his book, written in 1951, that the Holocaust was punishment for Jews not jumping onto Zion. He admits that I was among them who said it was wrong to go to Israel in the 20s and 30s.
Who says this?
Yisachar Techtel. He didn't study in Israel. His work was so influential, it was very rare for a Satmar Chosid to write a book about Zionism that got translated. It's translated into English. Right? The Satmar Rebbe's works aren't translated into English. Right? By Yoel Moshe, my knowledge is not translated into English. By Yoel Moshe is a book that Moshe Teitelbaum, the Satmar Rebbe at the time, he lived into the 70s, I think. It's his two sons who were fighting out between Monroe and Williamsburg, in politics. It's great. So I know some of the lawyers behind it. It's just the lawyers getting rich. There are amazing holdings between these two brothers, and they're all fighting over who should take over after their father. While their father, your older brother, is great. Anyway, it was the father, Moshe, I'm sorry, his name is Yoel Teitelbaum. So he wrote a book by Yoel Moshe saying that the Holocaust happened because of Zionism. Not for Zionism, the Germans would have left us alone. Right? Zionism caused the hatred of the nations. And the Turi Karta is a more radical offshoot of this position, right? That says that we must wait for a call from God before having a political movement in Israel. We're allowed to live in Israel, to account live in Israel. We can't be in charge of the sewage and the transportation and the garbage. If someone in the Turi Karta is in Yerushalayim and he wants to get a letter to Haifa, he'll drive it over. He will not use the post office. They don't want sanitation, they don't want anything, they don't acknowledge it. There's signs in front, Meir Sha'arim say, please let join us in doing everything we can do to dismantle this hated Zionist state. It's a snake, it's just devouring the you know, it's destroying Judaism. Right? Of course, Teichtel's answer to that is, he's aware of all those positions. Teichtel's answer is, God did call us. That's Zionism. God did call us. He didn't answer. He says God did call us. It's just that we didn't heed the answer. Had we heeded the answer, he claims the Holocaust would not have happened. Pinchas Kelly collects these two of many interpretations. He says that these two must both be wrong. Listen to his theodicy argument. He says these two must both be wrong because if the Holocaust was some kind of message from God to us that we're doing something wrong, it's inconceivable that that message could be so nebulous and so unclear as to be explained in one way its exact opposite. Right, Colin? How could it be because one great thinker thinks it's because of Zionism, and one great thinker says because we weren't Zionist enough.
Wouldn't that argument mean that the Semitic was destroyed for no clear reason also? Because there were, I guess, Yirmiyahu was interpreting it one way and the false bodies were interpreting the exact opposite way.
Time has shown that Yirmiyahu was right. You're right. The average
interpreted.
Yeah, the average Israelite was against it, Yirmiyahu. Didn't ask God theologically, so why didn't you give Yirmiyahu some kind of staff or something? And Yirmiyahu asks for one in the Medrash. Hashem said, well, I gave one to Moshe, that didn't work so well with him. They still, you know, rejected him at times, right? But all right, but still, he didn't have to suffer through what I went through, because he did. Anyway, we're stiff-necked people.
Kelly's argument would be that in time, one of those answers would be clear.
Yes. Okay. Yes, correct. So here I present before you, and like the Gemara says, you're not allowed to go to Eov and say you're suffering for your own sins. It's known as Ona'at Devarim, right? We did in this class the story about Rabbi Akiva with Rabbi Eliezer, and you know. I'm talking about Rabbi Eliezer suffering and Rabbi Kiva's laughing that he's happy that he's right. So you're not allowed to do that. But we would explain through some mental gymnastics that Rabbi Kiva was not being insolent to his Rebbe. He was just, you know, trying to compliment his Rebbe over a particular approach to life that causes everybody to sin. Right? That's not where we are. Okay. This goes back to the Tochacha, which is Vayikra 26, Devarim 28. The Tochacha isn't telling us, this is my punishment to you if you violate my Torah. No more than a father is going to say, if you cross when the light is red, a car will hit you. Remember that? If you cross when the light is red, not a car may hit you, a car will hit you. You keep doing it, a car will hit you. So the kid goes out into the street many times when the light is red, and he looks, and he crosses, and goes, well, nothing happened. Right? He goes again, 40 times, 60 times, 100 times, 120 times. Nothing ever happens. I cross at the red all the time. I've never been hit by a car. And I cross at the red all the time, he says. Right? My father's lying. He tells me that if I violate his rule, right, that something bad will happen to me. No, that's not what the father said. Something bad is waiting to happen to you. It maybe that won't happen to you. Right? Just be a good boy. Follow the rules. But you know what sometimes even happens? Sometimes while he crosses the street when the light's red and his friend waits. No, I'm not crossing yet. I want to follow the rule. I only cross when the light is green. Right? And what happens while that kid is waiting? Dutifully for the light to change. A car making a turn makes it too sharp, jumps the curb and kills him right on the spot. While waiting for the green light for the light to change to green. You get it? The first guy is Rosh HaVetovlo. The second guy is Tzadik Varao. You see my metaphor?
Yeah.
Right? God, this is what makes life difficult for us. Right? Can we skip to the last person on this page? We'll do it today. Habakkuk 1. Let's read it. The very beginning of Habakkuk. It's not a Haftorah, and it's a tiny little book stuffed between Tzfanya and Nachum. He's in Trezor. Right? You can skip him by just having two pages together. Right? Okay. Micha, Nachum, Habakkuk, Tzfanya, Agas, Chaim, Malach. Okay, you got it? So, Hamaso Asher Chazo Habakkuk Hanavi. The burden of Habakkuk. Now, from the context of the story, it seems he knows about the Babylonians. Right? Chazal say that he's actually the child that Elisha revived. But that's really anachronistic. Because he told the woman at Chovek Espain, go hug your son. Right? So, how else could someone name a child Habakkuk? I don't know. But he's noticing the success of the Babylonians, right? So he says, "Ad ono Hashem shivati v'lo tishma. How long shall I cry out and you're not listening?" This sounds, if you say Tehillim on a regular basis, this sounds like a whole series of Baruch and Tehillim, right? From chapter 9 to chapter 14 are these kind of Baruch and Tehillim. Series of them, right? Especially your kiddush. Listen to your kiddush. Right? How long will you forget me, God? How long do you hide your face from me? Right? You see? All right. Tehillim is by nature a very faithful book of great faith, right? Because those are the problems that get into our liturgy. This is anywhere in our liturgy, right? The problem where Tehillim says, "How long are you sleeping, God? Wake up! Why are you aloof of all the problems in the world?" That pasuk doesn't get into our liturgy. A pasuk like "Hinei lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael" does. Understand, right? I'm not going to talk about God sleeping in our liturgy. But those psukim do appear in Tehillim. We spoke about this at the beginning of the semester, if you recall. Mishlei being very optimistic, of course, that's the nature of the proper. Koheles being very pessimistic. There's looking around us. Okay? And Tehillim is some kind of a combination of the two, right? Depending on circumstance. Okay? So, Habakkuk says, let's get back to where we started with the parak. So, what he was reading sounds like a little like a parak in Tehillim, right? How long will I continue to cry and you're not listening? Ezak elecha chamas v'lo soshia. I'm calling out about all the violence and you don't save. Now, look, Habakkuk is a Navi. I'm not. When I read a pasuk like this, I say, Habakkuk, who are you? Who are you? Who are you to say that God has to listen to you when you cry out? Right? Remember? Amoeba, us, God's across the river, right? What time do you have?
Isn't just luck? Every Jew does this. Not Kabbalah who's standing out and saying, oh, you're really asking God.
Okay, this got to be in the Bible. Why wasn't this edited out? The answer is, that's the point of this course, is that this is the Dafka in the Bible. Right? Why wasn't Habakkuk decanonized to something, right? Who said this could get into the Bible? That's actually the answer. We want this in the Bible. Why should I continue to see such strife? Right? Such iniquity. I should look at such violence. Such tragic violence in front of Riva Madon Yisrael. Okay. Now you want to know why your Torah is so weak? Why justice does not thrive in the land? Because look what you're allowing. Why should we be more righteous than you? Remember who spoke this way? One of our first discussions in this class, right? Why should we be more righteous than you, God? You tell us to pay our workers on time, right? You know the mitzvah. You don't pay your workers on time.
A lot of food spot makes a good point.
What?
Yes, a lot of food spot makes a good point.
Yes. What would it mean that God, you have to pay your workers on time? What would that mean?
Somebody just been spot again.
Yes. I want to see her. Come on. I've been so good. Right? Why? And what's worse is when I see the bad people getting what I think I deserve. See, Avraham is Halbtaris. Avraham says, shall the righteous and the wicked share the same fate? V'hayokat tzadik karosha. Right? Earlier this semester, we saw some psukim in Koheles where it says, no, the tzadik gets what the rasha deserves. He's waiting for the green light dutifully. He's following your rule. And a car jumps the curb and kills him. Right? The tzaddik gets what the Rosha deserves, and the Rosha gets what the tzaddik deserves. That really gets my goat, says Yirmiyahu, in one of the next passages, Yirmiyahu chapter 12. Right? Madua derech v'sho'im tzalecha. He doesn't ask why do the righteous suffer, because maybe he's no gay b'davar. I'm not going to ask about me. But God, you know, how much wood the guy's chopping for a woman when no one's watching. But I can't believe that this guy deserves this kind of reward. Right? But God, if you want to know why your Torah is so weak and why justice is not prevailing in this land, I'm challenging you to do something. So let me ask you this question. If I could compose a book, even with pictures, of the most gruesome, terrible things that happened in the Holocaust, when I was in high school, Central, the girls' high school of MTA, put out just such a book. It was chilling, with pictures from the Holocaust, with the psukim and Tanakh that foretell those things happening. You want to hear some of them? If you open up Yirmiyahu chapter 16 and chapter 8, it doesn't say the amount, but it could be thousands of children being killed in an open field, decaying in the hot sun because there's no one to bury them. Open graves, not even in graves. Just ready, they'll decompose there in the ground, or birds will come and, or animals will come and drag their carcasses away. Right? Parents who are reduced to eating the flesh of their children because their minds are going haywire with hunger. somehow in their mind, it wasn't just, okay, I'll just starve to death. No, let me live another few days. I'll eat my child. There's actually a story like that in Tanakh. Right? The description is in Eicha. And there's a kina in Tivashlena Nashim Piryam. Women are cooking their babies. Women. Who would think of doing such a thing? There's a story like that, you know, in Malachim Bet, right? She goes to the king of the northern tribes that there's a woman taking another woman to court. Because yesterday we decided to draw lots, which child we'd eat first. And the lot fell on my child, so we ate my son first. And now it's time to eat our son, and she's hiding him. That was the court case. I want my lunch. Right? About 25, 30 years ago, there was a group called Dabru Emet, a group of Christian and largely Reformed conservative Jews, but I must say, two or three Orthodox Jews who joined this group. And they came out with a sort of reconciliation between Judaism and Christianity. Dabru Emet, speak the truth. And they came out with some mission statements. Among them were, and you probably picked that up too, if you look up Dabru Emet, look up for the mission statements. One was, there is nothing in the Holocaust that can be traceable to any Christian theology. Hitler would have turned on Christianity also, by the way. How the Christian theologians, the true ones, you know, oh yeah, true ones may have turned on him. But when he said that, he writes in Mein Kampf that the reason why I must be rid of the Jews is because the Jews have taught the world about guilt and a conscience, and anyone with a conscience will not allow me to put forth my plan. Of course, he was going to destroy everything that was weak. He was going to kill tens of thousands of the weak in Germany. Germans. He started. Right? You know what I'm talking about? The euthanasia program? With the undesirables and the those who won't contribute to society. Right? That's logical. That's what we should do. Those people don't deserve to live. They're going to take so much from this perfect society they want to create, and they won't contribute anything. Those people don't deserve to live. And he knew that the only people who will stand up to this program is the Jew. Wouldn't you think, and this, he was speaking these things in 1923. There were speeches in the early 20s where he spoke this way. Wouldn't you think some Christians in the audience would say, Christians would also be against that? Right? When the Protestants spoke against the euthanasia program, it stopped in Germany. But no one was there to speak against the Jews being killed like that. So that program was going to go after the Jews, the Christians also at some point, right? Okay. And so we're hoping that someone with a sense of the godly, sense of religion, whatever religion you're espouse, that you will stand up to this. Okay, so Yirmiyahu speaks of this happening to children. His women argued over who gets to eat which child. Right? I dare say that there is precedent within Christian theology, Christian treatment of Jews, throughout the second millennium, from 1000 to 1933. The Jews were forced to wear badges, they had to wear distinctive clothing, they were forced into ghettos, where ghetto was the name of a city in Italy where Jews were forced to live. If you want to say that Nazism broke new ground in genocide because they had technology, and the technology to do it. Right? I'm not saying it's on the same scope, but but the hatred was building up that allowed this to happen. Okay, so that's just on. If you want to look at some of the mission statements of that Ruah event, the hatred was there, but also the activities were there. They were done. They were perpetrated. Okay. So if I presented you with pictures of this booklet, I know I have it at home. It has like 100 pictures in it with psukim. With me? And it said, well, things they'll do to you. They will have no respect for the old, no respect for the young. And from that picture, they have these Nazi guards pushing these old ladies with their tikkulah. They look to be 90 years old and pushing them to the ground and shooting them. No respect for the old, no pity for the young. And they show pictures of them towards the babies out of the trains. So if I showed you all those pictures, right? And say, excuse me, this is predicted. Right? Not from a vengeful God that wants it to happen, just from a prediction of what's waiting to happen. Right? Wait a second. Look at it, says in the Torah, people young and old will get caught up. Innocent and guilty will get caught up. That is a Gemara that says, Kivan Shinita and Rishus the Mashkis Ligof, Eno Mavchin Bid Tzadik LaRosha. Once the destroyer goes out, it's not going to differentiate between the Tzadik and the Rosha. Adra, Maskil, the Tzadik. It'll start with the righteous. The fact is, if you look at the earliest Nuremberg laws, who did the earliest Nuremberg laws in 1933 mostly affect? Observant German Jews or secular German Jews? What was the original laws? They were telling you who couldn't marry, they were against intermarriage. They didn't want the putrefaction of the blood. Right? They didn't want the impure blood of the Jew mixed with the German. You didn't have to tell that to Orthodox Jews in Germany. Right? They knew not to intermarry. The original point was against the secular Jew, right? Mixing in with our Jew. Okay, what's the upshot? What am I trying to get at here? Is that Habakkuk is telling us, God, your system of justice has rotted its way into man. If you want that to change, we need you to change. We need you to do something first. Can you picture a Habakkuk saying to someone in 1944 saying some of these psukim and saying, God, this is crazy. How do you allow this to continue? God says, I'm out of here. I'm not even watching. I'm not, right? Hester Panim is where God is looking through a little hole at us. He sees us, but we don't see him. Right? Tohu Vavohu means God isn't even looking. God, you're on your own. So God says, okay, I've heard the Habakkuk. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make the winter of 1941 the coldest winter of the 20th century, and Germany will fail in their abrogation of their treaty with Russia. That's it. That'll be the end of the war. But continue as long as the Germans feel that they can still win. But the war was really lost in 41. 44 was another fruit. If 1941 was a mild winter, this world would be Germany today. Or if they were, they had Russia in their pocket. They didn't have to go into Russia. They could have just taken care of England first and then go after Russia. By the way, Hitler, Yimach Shemo, was an awful strategic. They were awful. As good as their fighting force was, their strategies were just to look after the war. Some of the decisions they made, because they were so sure that they would just defeat everybody. Right? It'd be far from me to tell you what the events of 1933 and 1945 were in God's minds. But I can picture Habakkuk coming to God and say, God, you owe us. You owe us big. And God says, okay, it's just going to take 3 years. Like the 3 years between the death of Sarah and the birth of Rivka in the Medrash, 3 years. And you'll see prophecies taking place. I don't know how else to put it. I owe it to you in a course like this called Theodicy in the Bible to try this. The biggest tragedy of our collective history, no doubt, the Holocaust. It's bigger than the Churbans, the two Churbans. In scope.
Is there any person saying that what happens to good people is just a result of natural order? Not that it's just God saying, I'm going to give you this or give the Rasha that. It's just natural order.
The typical answer Ramban gives from Eof is this is an answer because of reincarnation. The typical answer we might give is that there's an afterlife, which is much more significant than this life here.
Right? But it's just like God isn't giving the good people bad things, it's giving the bad guy good things. It's just like the life happens to be,
Things look random. That's the real problem, is that I had a young cousin who died of leukemia, and he just said, I know where I'm going, I know what I'm doing, I know what's happening, there's no cure for this, everything they do fails, I know what's ultimately happening. I just want to be sure that, or the whole night before he died, he said Shema the whole night, he was such a pure soul, and he just, one thing he said, I don't want to think that this is random, but that this is happening for a reason, that there's some cause to this. Not just that I got a bad gene or something like that. But there's something behind it. Like I believe everything in the world. Right? So that's it's crucial. And the psukim Habakkuk is going to turn things around, by the way. He's going to say, his last chapter begins, Tefillah l'Habakkuk hanavi al shigyonot. Shigyonot. Where the Medrash says that he said, God, you made me meshuggah. Forgive me. I was meshuggah. I made a shviga. I was shogag. Right? I was shigyonot. So Habakkuk is Haftorah. It's the Haftorah of the second day of Shavuos in Chutz Laretz. Right? We'll see how the book ends. The answer is that you get to be in Tanakh. You get to be in Tanakh. He didn't give Eov an answer. He didn't give Moshe an answer. Habakkuk did not get an answer. But God allows man to speak this way with chutzpah and says, I'll allow you to be canonized. Or at least that's what the rabbis felt. Okay. All right, so I'm not going to see...